Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here. Drance has gone back to the media room where Rick Tocchet and Patrick Alvin will speak very, very shortly on year-end media availability day here. And we've already heard from Canucks players. Now we'll get a chance to hear from, again, newly named Jack Adams Award winner Rick Tocchet as best coach of the year in the NHL. And Patrick Alvin also up for some hardware. He's a finalist for the Jim Gregory GM of the Year Award. And, you know, we'll see Bill Zito and Jim Nill. Obviously, Jim Nill has built a really impressive team in Dallas. Bill Zito has done great work in Florida. So stiff competition for the Jim Gregory Award for Patrick Alvin. But given just the sheer amount of turnover, how far the team has come under Patrick Alvin's tenure, and again, just the volume of new additions, trades, acquisitions that they were able to make and how high the hit rate was for them, it wouldn't shock me at all if Patrick Alvin ends up taking that award home and adding to the Hall of Hardware for the Vancouver Canucks this season. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And again, we keep getting the question of, okay, Elias Pettersson, knee injury. Why wasn't he rested before the playoffs? And again, as we talked about with Drancer just in the previous segment, I expect that will be a question put to Rick Tocchet, put to Patrick Alvin. What was the thought process behind how Pettersson's injury was managed? Could you have done things differently to get a better version of Elias Pettersson going into the playoffs? I think that is 100% something that we will hear, or at least I'd be very much anticipating that we hear that in the media availability, which starts here momentarily. In terms of what else you want to hear, you can text in 650-650. What do you hope that Patrick Alvin and Rick Tocchet are asked about when they speak at the podium here? You know, I think obviously from Alvin, he'll get asked about individual players and unrestricted free agents and restricted free agents specifically. He'll also just be asked generally about the team's big picture priorities. And, you know, one of the things we heard relentlessly from the players was making sure that they're not satisfied with what they accomplished this year, with acknowledging how significant a step forward it was, acknowledging what they were able to do, but also still retaining that hunger to get even better. They raised the bar a lot this year. They all said to a man, they know they need to keep raising it. They know they need to keep putting in that work. And that mentality certainly extends to the front office as well. They did phenomenal work to get the team to this stage. And in some ways, now the real challenge begins, right? And that's the same for the players. Okay, hey, we got that taste of playoff hockey. Now we know what we need to do to raise our games and be even better next time we're in this position. And again, for the front office, made this team, and no doubt about it, division winner, playoff team. Now the challenge is to put them into that perennial Stanley Cup contender tier of teams. And it's going to be very interesting to hear from Patrick Alvin how he views that challenge. What are the concrete steps that his team and his front office can take to get towards that goal this summer? And what are the kind of big picture priorities? I know we talked about it on the show with Drance yesterday. Drancer and Rick Dhaliwal published the piece at The Athletic last night, some of what they're hearing on how the team will prioritize things going into the summer. And, you know, a couple of things that stood out to that and dovetail a little bit with what we heard from the players. The team is obviously very, very happy with the size they had on the blue line this year. Tyler Myers and Nikita Zadorov, of course, both pending unrestricted free agents. And it sounds like it's going to be a priority to retain at least one of those players if they can. Tyler Myers said earlier, in very strong language, he would love to be back here. He loves Vancouver, loves the fan base. He's excited. Now, it doesn't mean it will work out. Canucks still have to make him a reasonable offer. He's still going to be a player who's pretty in demand, having just played, you know, some of the best hockey of his career as a 6'8" right shot defenseman who's mobile. He's going to be in demand. So it doesn't mean he hits the slam dunk to come back, but it does feel like if the Canucks aren't able to work something out with Nikita Zadorov, can they up that offer to Tyler Myers a little bit and at least bring back one of the giants on the blue line for the Canucks next year? And of course, Zadorov, you know, again, He was taking his shots at Edmonton. He was taking his shots at Calgary, but also spoke really glowingly about his experience in the city, how much his family likes the city and enjoys being here, and saying he'd like to. He hopes they can work something out as well. Obviously, not as strong for a player, you know, who's just played half the season here compared to Tyler Myers, who's finishing up a 5-year contract. You expect some of that difference, but Nikita Zadorov certainly a very different tone than, you know, Filip Hronek, Elias Lindholm, who were a lot more vague about what their intentions might be this summer. And then Dakota Joshua, as we talk about that size element, right, and how keen the team is to retain as much of that identity as they can from this year, Dakota Joshua is a big piece of that up front. Not a player who would be easy to replace if he leaves an unrestricted free agency. And now Drance and Rick Dhaliwal also reporting that they'd really like to get something done with Dakota Joshua. And Joshua saying also, he likes it here. He would love to come back. Talked about the fit with the organization being so important to him. And you can understand that. This is a place that, I don't want to say took a chance on him, because I know there are other teams when he initially signed here as a UFA, a Group 6 UFA, there were other teams that were interested, but they gave him a 2-year deal. They put in the work. Rick Tocchet put in the coaching work with him, and that included, you know, having some tough love for him at training camp, and look how it paid off for Dakota Joshua. So you can certainly understand his attraction to being with and remaining with the team where he had his breakout season, where he's found a fit. I mean, he's found a fantastic bit of chemistry with Connor Garland as well. Again, none of this means it's going to happen, but if you're kind of trying to read the tea leaves a little bit here and plot out who's more likely to stay, who's more likely to go, just based on what we've heard at media availability today, I'd say you're putting stock up on Tyler Myers, Dakota Joshua, maybe Nikita Zadorov even a little bit, although I think that one will be tough, and maybe stock down on Elias Lindholm. And that should be no surprise, right? I mean, from the moment Elias Lindholm was acquired, one of the things we started to hear from reporters was, yeah, they're not against re-signing him, but they're also perfectly fine to view him as a rental. Now, obviously, the ups and downs through the regular season with Lindholm made it seem much more likely that he'd be leaving as a free agent. He has a really strong playoff run. Maybe the team starts to rethink it a little bit, but I just step back and think about the amount he's going to cost. We know Rick Tocchet prefers playing him at center. You already have two centers in JT Miller and Elias Pettersson that you're paying almost $20 million combined to next year. How much can you really afford to spend on a guy who you want to play down the middle and would inevitably be playing behind those guys? Considering how they want to keep the size on the back end, considering how they want to find more offensive threats in the top six, it just feels like they're not going to be able to realistically match what Elias Lindholm is able to get on the open market. Again, all of this is preliminary. All of this can change. But based on what we heard from the players, that's how I would adjust my opinion a little bit on who's likely to stay and who is likely to go here in unrestricted free agency. And, of course, on Filip Hronek, you know, as he said, he's an RFA. So there's only so much he can do. Now, one of the levers he has is, of course, if he's unwilling to budge whatsoever on his contract demands, that puts the Canucks in a difficult position, right? That gives them a choice to make. Do we try to deal this player? Do we let it go to arbitration, take a one-year deal? Then we have a pending unrestricted free agent on our hands. But is that the best bet? So, yeah, Hronek's absolutely right. It's not as simple as he can just make a decision to go somewhere else. But, as we've talked about so much on the show, he also has a lot of leverage, even as an RFA, in this situation. All right, let's go to the podium. Rick Tocchet, Patrick Alvin here at Rogers Arena.
Sure. Patrick, just your thoughts on the playoff run that your team went on and the overall season that you guys just had as an organization.
I'm not happy sitting here today. Definitely not satisfied. We lost our last game, and it was only in round two. To reflect on the whole season, you back it up when you guys were sitting in front of us, and Jim Rutherford said that if everything goes right, we have a chance to be a playoff team. And when Talk and I talked during the year, it's what was about the process leading to playoffs and how do we get better every day. And I think if you look at the segments of our games, I think we got better. But that being said, we're not satisfied at all. You don't know how many chances you're going to have to play in game seven. And my message to the players is that this is something you're going to bear with you the whole summer, that we lost our last game, and that was only in round two. It's just going to get harder. And you can talk about the tough learning for some of the guys that haven't been in the playoff environment. And, it sure is a different animal. Playing 82 games versus getting in every second day, and every game is just getting harder and harder. So can't say enough about the fans and my experience being in Vancouver here. It was amazing what they did for us. The one game that stands out is when we're down 4-2 against Edmonton, and the fans gave us a win 5-4 there with Garland's late goal. It was amazing. Driving in game days and watching all the jerseys, I mean, guys talked about it. Ryan Johnson, my assistant GM, kept saying, like, hey, you wait on a sunny day when the playoff is in Vancouver. It's just amazing. So I think the players expressed their appreciation to the fans. They expressed their interest. They want to stay here. They want to continue to build. And I'm pleased with the process from the coaches, how they work with the players. But that being said, not satisfied.
You talk about not being satisfied. At the same time, you know, this group took some big strides, accomplished a lot. How does what this group did this year color how you approach things going forward with some tough decisions to make this summer?
Yeah, and I think that's the meetings I'm going to have with Rick and the coaches here moving forward and with the hockey operations staff. And as I said, the players expressed their interest to stay. We all know we have a salary cap, so we want to be a competitive team moving forward. So it's only so much I can pay certain individuals. And hopefully we can find ways to keep a lot of players, because I do think that a lot of them have a chance to, with the coaches here, take the game to the next level.
Rick, congratulations on winning Coach of the Year. Petey came in here a little while ago and said that he was playing with an injured knee, said that it happened in January and that it got worse as things went on. Was there any consideration to holding him out for a period of time then to potentially letting him rest to be better down the stretch?
Yeah, I think he has some tendonitis. You obviously go through the doctors and the trainers, and we felt, you know, it was fine to keep going. We had to shut him down.
And Patrick, it looked like this team, while it accomplished a lot, it looked like offensively, even when Brock was healthy and Petey was healthy, that they may have still been a forward short, a top six forward short. I know that was a big topic of conversation around the trade deadline. Watching the way things played out, is that something, in hindsight, you might have been more aggressive at that time of year, or did you do everything you could do? And how did you see it as it played out?
Yeah, I think we had, when we talked about the lineup and the roster we had and moving forward and where we can allocate money and what would give us the best chance to win games in the playoffs, we felt strengthening the middle was a priority with Elias Lindholm. Would I have access to more assets and money, I would definitely added a top six forward. We didn't have that opportunity, and I think that's something we're going to look at here to see in what part of our lineup we need to improve on. We still have a lot of younger players that are knocking on the door, and with a good summer, should be ready to take a big step.
Rick, congratulations.
Thanks.
I always knew you could be a 500 coach, so.
I just made it.
A couple of questions rolled into one, but it's about your staff.
Yeah.
Do you, and I'm thinking partly of Sergei because he's sort of part-time.
Yeah.
But do you expect all of your staff to be back? Do you expect to add anyone to your staff, perhaps, to coach a power play?
Yeah, we talked yesterday, Patrick and I try to keep this intact. Yeah, you're looking at all options. The power play obviously is something we got to look at. I'm not quite sure it's I think it's more of a connection thing for me. You know, game seven, 4-minute power play. I don't think it's about plays. I think it was about a connection thing, and that's on me. You know, I got to get, you know, these guys connected a little bit more when the pressure hits. You got to remember, you know, Edmonton's been in that situation the last 7-8 years in those power play situations. It's the first time for those guys, and, you know, we got to make sure that going into next year that when those situations arise, we can handle that, those situations. So, you know, when you got the Twins, you got Gonchar there, you got Yogi and myself, I think it's a pretty knowledgeable staff. I don't think you just need, you know, me personally, as if there's a guy out there that I feel is the guy I would look at, but I don't know if that's the case here personally.
Okay. And for you, Patrick, I mean, you talked about it in your opening statement about, you know, having lost game seven and remember that over the summer. You have a lot of young players who have, this is their first taste, and you probably know yourself, often the teams that get that first taste, they regress the next year, and it happened here in 2020. It even happened back in the, you know, the Sedins Luongo team. The first time they made the playoffs, they missed the next year. Are you concerned about that you have, again, so many young players who haven't handled winning, that's something you have to be aware of?
Well, I would lean towards the opposite. I would think they got to have a taste of it now, and I would hope they're going to want it even more. And for us as a staff, myself and Rick, it's about communication here, and we have set the standard here now where the players know what the expectations are coming into training camp, and we got the respect back. Game one next year is going to be hard because we won the division. They all know that we're a good team. I think, based on the conversation I had with the players, they wanted more. They got a taste of it, and they understand now that some of them said they didn't understand how hard every single game was, that you played game one, and suddenly one day later you're going to play game two, and it just gets harder and harder as we go. And I think that's where good teams, I think we talked about practice habits too, or practice habits needs to be better. The first half is about building up for the second half, and I think that's where I saw some inexperience from our players, that they weren't prepared to play meaningful games in February, March, and April. We got to be better there.
Patrick, we've congratulated Rick, but we should congratulate you as well on the being a Jim Gregory finalist. What does that mean to you?
Well, I believe, and we believe that individual success come from team success. And in this particular case, it's definitely not about me. It's about what the coaches have done to the players. And in the end of the day, I think the players contribute to this award. My staff, they've done a tremendous job. And it's hard. I'm sure he said the same thing. It's hard when you're sitting here and you lost. The individual awards, I respect it, and I'm happy that my peers voted, but I would rather have a team award.
And Rick, we don't get to see much of how you and Patrick interact. Can you talk to us a little bit about what your relationship has been like this year and what he's been like as a general manager for you as a coach?
Yeah, I think when you go through an interview process, I've been through a lot in my career, and a lot of people, GMs, when you interview, they always, you know, what's your relationship? How do you feel a relationship with a GM is? And, you know, I'm very lucky. I mean, I got a little bit of a runway with knowing Jim and Patrick, but the personalities, how we mesh, even the way Patrick acts with our other coaches, like, it's a tight group. He's around enough to be around. Like, he's not in our faces, and he loves the feedback, even feedback that he doesn't want to hear, and he takes it very well. and sometimes he doesn't. No, I should say. But I just think the connection, I think you have to be connected to your GM. And, you know, there's going to be some bumpy days and stuff, but I think the communication is outstanding, just like the organization and stuff like that. That's the one thing the year and a half I've been here, like, you know, you're going to go through issues here and there, but I think the communication has been awesome. The best, you know, probably the best I've ever had as a head coach. And, you know, definitely.
Rick, in terms of creating a winning culture here, I'm curious how your relationship with Patrick helps create that. Like, what do you take away from management in terms of building a winning culture? I'm sure you get the players, you're in the room with them, but from management, what are you taking away from them? Or are you taking something and transferring it to the players? How is that winning culture being built from management from your perspective?
Well, I think you got to, you know, you talk about systems and what kind of, how you want to play. And then obviously the management GM, they try to tailor that to the system and, you know, what the coach likes. But it's not just, it's obviously, you know, like I value their opinion too. This guy, you know, playing this guy, this type of player, do you need this? I couldn't be a GM. It's a hard job to piece things together because coaches, all they want is want. And it's hard to get, right? But that's why I feel like we're connected in the sense, I think we know how to play, how we want the Canucks crest and how we want to play. I think we're all on the same page. And it's good to have some good debates on whether it's this player or this draft pick or whatever. Well, more the, not the draft picks for me, but more the players and the way we play. You know, Patrick gives us a lot of autonomy when it comes to that, you know, how we play system-wise. And when it comes to players, like I said, there's they value our opinions. And even like Footy and Gaunch or Yosi, you know, he values those opinions too. I think that helps create that environment.
Patrick, a lot of the guys who are up for, who are free agents, are had very strong playoffs. Some of them didn't. How much does that weigh their playoff performance as opposed to regular season performance weigh on how you will try to re-sign them or how aggressively to re-sign them?
Yeah, I think you longer you have a player and you more you see them in critical games, you more you get to know about them. And I was very pleased with a lot of them's performance here and how they expressed their pleasure to work with the coaching staff and how much the coaches have helped them to be ready for those situations. And as I said to each one of them, my preference is to keep them, but I'm also going to find a way to keep them where money going to make sense for us in order to be competitive moving forward.
Do you have, like, I'm sure you've known this is coming for a long time, but do you have like a pecking order in your head, this is the way I'm going to go to you first, then you, like how I'm just wondering from the inside, how are you kind of approaching
it? Yeah, we have different ideas how we want to structure our team moving forward, and conversations with Rick, the priorities, and we have early conversations leading up to the playoffs with some of the players, and we decided during the playoffs to keep it quiet here, but again, I think we have also a lot of younger player in our system here that deserves to get an opportunity coming training camp, and we might leave some spots open for them to come in and compete and give us more.
Patrick, understanding now that Elias was playing through something over the second half, but also hearing talk say that you didn't think about sitting him down, he didn't look anything like the player that put up 102 points a year ago and was the player of the month or one of the stars of the month in January. What did you see and what didn't you see from Elias down the stretch and into the playoffs? And now with the new contract kicking in, obviously, you know, expectations and pressure come in a market like this one. So what do you guys as an organization have to do to help him get back to being that dominant player?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The expectations comes I don't know what he said when he was sitting up here, but I'm sure he wasn't pleased with his performance after the All-Star break. And I think he learned a lot. I think he's hungry. He expressed it right away that he knows what he needs to improve on here in the summer, and he wants to come back and be a really, really impactful player. His talent level is unique. I mean, that doesn't go away. again, I think this was his first playoff experience playing every second day with traveling. And and when you're being a player like him and Quinn Hughes, they all going to play harder against you. So how do you, what do you learn and how do you prepare yourself leading up for the second half? And I think, to be honest, some of the additions we did last summer was to bring in guys with that experience that could help us teaching the young guys what practice habits are the first part. And I think we got to get better. I think our guys know that you prepare yourself the early part of the season for what's coming the second part. And I think that's something that coaches we have here, they have the experience. So it's about willingness to be coached and listen and execute.
And you were asked earlier about the lack of scoring from the wings. That became a bit of an issue. How do you make sense of Ilya Mikheyev's final 60 games with one goal, playing every night, playing in the top six a fair bit? And is there an NHL player there that can contribute to a team that wants and needs to get better?
In Ilya?
Yeah.
Yeah, I truly believe so. It wasn't his fault that he was put in a top six position. It was my fault. I don't think anybody was expecting Ilya Mikheyev to be a top six player. He's a good mid-six player, and we all know guys that miss playoffs. Oh, sorry, miss training camp, especially with the injury that he had. And I mean, I never seen a guy working harder at his game to get better. And obviously, it's sad to see somebody losing his confidence as he did. He created chances and he played hard for us. I'm convinced that he's going to come back and provide the value that he has and the intangibles as he brings with speed. But again, my job is to put players in a position where they belong and for them to be successful. And Ilya is a good penalty killer guy, and he's a guy that could play in different positions, both sides, and I'm sure he's hungry to come back. And remember, I think his first 20 games, he produced there. And then, unfortunately, for different reasons, he lost, I believe, his confidence.
Rick, your team was very potent offensively during the regular season. During the playoffs, the lack of shots became a major talking point. Yeah. You pointed to a lack of execution with missed shots. But are there some things in terms of systems that you will look at during this offseason to make adjustments heading into next season?
Yeah, I'd be crazy not to. I got to do a deep dive. There is some simple things of hitting the net, working on your shot, you know, changing angles. I mean, that's things you got to work on. And it's my job to make sure these guys keep developing that skill. There could be some system stuff there. We have some really good hockey minds in that dressing room, coaching staff. So we'll look at that stuff. I know a lot of people here like shot volume, which I don't mind. I'm not quite sure just throwing a puck at that with nobody in front. Now we got to get some guys to get to the net. We need more net front presence, things like that. But yeah, no, that, I guess to answer your question, yeah, I got to look at myself and look at a deep dive. Can we give the player, I always feel that as a coach, you got to give the players something to look at, and maybe in going into the training camp, maybe something we'll work on a little bit more offensively. Instead of, I think we were heavy system last training camp. I wanted to make sure that guys knew exactly what we needed at certain times, and I think we were successful because we did that training camp. I think that next training camp might be a little bit different, a little more creativity, a little more skill-oriented. That will help some guys, but the good old-fashioned, we need people to get to the net. We gotta get that in there too.
One of the things that we saw, it was a major difference from previous seasons, was you limited rush chances against, odd man rushes, but you didn't attack much in transition. Did that lack of attacking off the rush make it more difficult to put teams on their heels during the playoffs?
Yeah, and it comes from execution too, and getting your defenseman in the rush. You know, I love the makeup of our D. It's big, gangly. You keep McDavid. Three assists and five. Like that's hard to do. And I think that I credit our D from that. So sometimes you got to take a little bit. You got to rob Peter, pay Paul sometimes, right? But saying that, we do have to get better on the rush and more execution. I think at the start of the year, first half of the year, I think we got some good luck. You know, we scored on a 3-on-2. Our conversion rate was high. Second half, it wasn't. And we weren't getting a lot of 3-on-2s and 4-on-2s. But it's another thing we got to look at for sure.
Patrick, knowing what you have already on the roster, what would you like to add to the roster other than Wayne Gretzky?
I already gave him the list.
Yeah.
And it's a short list.
No, I think we're going to continue to see a top six winger would be nice. I think we need to add some speed. But again, for us is to meet with my staff here and see what we have in house. And as I said, I'm sure a lot of players in Abbotsford took big steps here. So we'll continue here over the next couple of weeks and see what we have in terms of free agency and the players going to stay here or how much cap space we have left.
And Rick, looking at the Oilers series in the end, is there something you wish maybe you'd done differently in terms of setting your lineup, whatever it might be?
Yeah, it's tough to play the what if game. You know, the lesson I learned, well, it's just a lesson. You go into the season, obviously that 4-minute power play. I think Mick had that chance on that breakaway. You wish you could, what if we scored a goal? I think that would have loosened us up, because I think once, we didn't score the power, it wasn't great. I felt a lot of tightness from guys. Our execution went for, there was about 20 minutes. We had a tough time making a tape-to-tape pass. It looked like a lot of guys, to be honest with you, wasn't they were nervous. I'm not sure they wanted the puck. I think there was more like playing safe, and that's when Edmonton started to come. When we got down 3-0 in the third period, it was like, you could see, Connor Garner led the charge. He goes, give me the puck. And that's the style we wanted. So I think it was a lesson learned. I guess your question is, yeah, I learned under pressure that we got to, maybe we got to figure with experience, handle when teams hit the pressure on us, how do we handle it? I thought we made strides in that, over the year. So I got to give the guys credit, but that game 7 is the ultimate test, right? I mean, that's ultimate pressure. And I thought there was a 20-minute, we didn't handle it well. And, the 11 guys at first, I think, first time in the playoffs, the young, the Huggies and P never been in those situations, that's the way. They got to get. They'll be better for it. So I think that'll help. Plus the coaching. I got to come up with other ways if that ever happens again. How do we handle it better? So I think everybody takes a piece of the pie and gets better at it.
Patrick, quite a few players this year enjoyed career best seasons in Rick's system, including some of the free agents that you signed last year. Do you think that makes Vancouver a more attractive place for free agents this summer? Do you hope to leverage that?
Yeah, and I think I said it last year too. That was something I recognized, and the conversations here. How can you not be excited about how the fans treat the players and the excitement around here? And Jim, Rick has said it several times that the respect we get back here, the players deserve it, playing for the crest again, and. I also believe that the staff we have here get recognized for how they work with the individuals to become better. And I feel that that's attracting part of the game nowadays.
Quinn Hughes took another step forward this year, playing alongside Filip Hronek. how much credit do you give Hronek for unlocking that side of Hughes, and how does that play into the upcoming negotiations?
Yeah, no, I think they played really well together. Two good puck-moving guys. I think there is part of their games that I like together, but I also think that they're capable of having their own pair. I think you can get more out of Hronek offensively. I think he maybe played a little bit cautious with Quinn at times, backing him up and giving him the puck. But I know they really like to play together. We expressed to Phil that we want to keep him here and be a part of us moving forward. And we'll see if we can get the deal done. But we still he's an RFA, so we control him here for another year.
Patrick, big picture, it's clear from the way you've spoken throughout this availability that you're not going to be content to just run in place, that next year you want to go further than this. And yet we know how challenging with the cap and with all your expiring players it's going to be to just return this team, much less get better. When you think about the puzzle pieces and how they fit together, just big picture, what's the main challenge as you're considering it going into this offseason?
Well, the main challenge is to fit 23 players on the roster. That's always the biggest challenge. I think that's where our job here is to build the roster and the lineup and see what areas that we're willing on to. As I said, to put some younger players in, and by allocating money, I believe our goaltending or back end is not the best. One of the better ones in the playoffs. In the middle, we were really strong, and I don't know. That's something we need to talk about to see what the formula works. And I think it's somehow a copycat league, but you're also going to be projecting, you know, how are the other teams going to be built this summer, and what type of hockey are we going to see next year? We know that a lot of teams in our division are going to be good even next year. The West was impressive this year, really impressive. So this is something we're going to talk about here over the next couple of weeks, but it's a challenge to get the pieces in the puzzle.
With, I think Rick described the defense corps as gangly a little bit earlier in this press conference. You've got Dakota Joshua, Myers, and Zadorov, three guys who share some common traits in that they're towering presences, play with some snarl and heaviness. In your lineup, how crucial is it to maintain the size edge that seemed to be such a significant part of this team's identity as the year went along?
Yeah, we wanted to keep all those guys, as I said, and hopefully we can come to an agreement and work with them. And again, for me, it's not about giving one guy all the money. It's about finding ways to be competitive and finding ways to have players that are able to improve, as we saw this year. Dakota, we're coming in here highly recommended by my staff, and we have seen him over the 2 years for him to take steps. We'll find the next Dakota Joshua here to the coaches to work with. I'm confident in my staff to be able to provide the right personnel for Rick and his coaches to work with and be successful moving forward.
Rick, you know, the season ends very abruptly, Game 7, yeah. And some of your players have mentioned that. So with your experience as a player and as a coach, what do you tell the players going into the off season so that they get that rest that they're needed and they're not, you know, fixating over the next 3 months about that Game 7 and what could have been different if different situations played out?
Yeah, I think obviously the exit means 20, 30-minute conversations. You know, you go through each guy, but these 30 minutes are, that's it. Like, it's not this it. I mean, I'm going to be in contact. I might be flying to see a couple of guys. It's 4 months before training? It's a 3-4 month thing. It's not, I can't get it done in 30 minutes. You know, there's some players in there that they know they have to get better fitness. Certain guys there, they got to work on their shot. You know, that's the feedback that you, as a coach, you have to give. But then all of a sudden, as the summer goes, it's keeping in touch, making sure your staff are talking to certain players. We did that a little bit last year, I thought, really worked. And we're going to do it probably even a little bit more. You know, sending video to the players this summer, I think is really important. Mental reps. You know, these are the sort of things you want to talk to your players for the half hour. But there's just so much more, you know. And so I think it's weird. When you lose, you don't think you're going to lose. And then when you lose the next day, everybody feels empty, right? You know, you're not. That's the hardest part. So can you channel, you know, can you take the feelings that you had when you lose and what ifs for your training and your motivation and how you're going to get better? That's really what the summers are for. The other 30 or the other 28 teams are saying the same, or 20, whatever the, what's my math here, four teams left. 28 teams are saying the same thing right now. So we just got to make sure that we have a motivated group next year, and it's up to our staff here to make sure that they get the message.
Thanks, everyone.
Good.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys. Thanks.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet and general manager Patrick Alvin with lots to say to the media here on locker room cleanout day at Rogers Arena. We will take a quick break. Drancer will hustle over from the media room, and we will wrap up with some thoughts on what we heard from Rick Tocchet and Patrick Alvin here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. All right, welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. About 10 minutes here to wrap up, put our final thoughts on what we heard from Rick Tocchet and Patrick Alvin here. Drancer's back, and, you know, I think we share probably the headline takeaway from that with Tocchet and Alvin, which is Patrick Alvin not once, not twice, noting that it was only the second round. It was only the second round.
Patrick Alvin is not mad. He's just disappointed. And that's a tough thing to hear. Patrick Alvin is disappointed, Dad. Like, this is the organization since 2014 that has far too often leaned on placing that bar directly on the ground and then backpatting for stepping over it. Meaningful games in March. To go from meaningful games in March to we lost the last game of the year and it was only round two. That is a massive departure in swagger, positioning, standards for this organization. Like, probably the clearest declaration of it. Especially given that we entered the season, as Alvin referenced, with the we're a playoff team if everything goes our way. Mm-hmm. Where we want to get to is to be a team that can do better. And all of a sudden, you've got this far higher standard that, like, it's not good enough to be here. It's not good enough to lose game seven in the second round. We want to do better. And in fact, we didn't prepare enough for the latter half of the season. We didn't prepare enough to win the heavier games, which is why we were an average team from the All-Star break on. Ilya Mikheyev didn't work out. That's on me. He shouldn't be a top-line player. That's my fault, said Patrick Alvin. I just thought the level of scrutiny that they welcomed, given the positive vibes around this season. Rick Tocchet asked what role systems played in the club's lack of offense, and I'm telling you right now, okay, because I've said it many times, I don't love the spray and pray approach. I was critical of it literally all year, but I also think it was a completely justifiable way for this team to play, given some of the personnel limitations which Knobloch referenced after defeating the Canucks in Game 7. I thought Tocchet created a narrow path for this team to maximize their ability to win games, and I thought it was excellent, thoughtful work. And I think if you're going to get more offensively from this group, I don't fundamentally think it's about systems. I think it's about widening the way that this team can play, can approach, can attack the game to facilitate more creativity. So I want to note, I'm not personally someone who buys that, like, this is on Tocchet, the lack of scoring. But when that was suggested to him, the idea that he needs to do a deep dive, he needs to really look at it. He knows everyone's big on shot volume, but He's not necessarily. Which is fine, by the way. You know who else isn't? Craig Berube. You know who else has had a ton of success? Craig Berube. Like
Bruce Cassidy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm fine. If you want to be a well, Bruce Cassidy's both, but sure. To point taken. I don't think you need to sell out for volume. But I do think if you're going to rely on shot quality, you need to be generating off the rush, which this team didn't do. So
And he referenced that, right? We need to be better on the rush.
Absolutely. But more than that, it's like, this is the guy who yesterday won the Jack Adams, and today it was suggested to him that this club's lack of offense, a team that finished 7th in the NHL in total goals scored in the regular season, although obviously had a bit of a power outage in the playoffs, right? Jack Adams Award winner with the 7th highest scoring offense in the league, asked about whether his system restrains offense, says, yes, you know what, I need to do a deeper dive and consider different approaches for training camp. Do you know how remarkable that is? Like, not a hint of defensiveness?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, you're right. You know what? There's stuff we need to consider. We need to be open-minded to the possibility that we don't produce enough offense. And by the way, we're not happy that we lost in Game 7. In fact, we're furious. My message to the players is that this isn't good enough. And you didn't do enough to prepare. Let's go! This is what it's about, man.
Just for context, I'm sitting at the table. Dranser is like pacing around, punching the air. He is fired up about this.
This is it, man. This is it. Like, for so many years, we've done this show, and whether it was like short-term moves or, you know, low-intensity goals, an unwillingness to talk about winning the Stanley Cup, we're trying to make the playoffs, we're trying to play meaningful games late into the year. Like, this organization's aspirations have been, honestly, quasi-offensive to me. And sometimes you've been, like, critical of things, or we've been critical of things, and people are so scared to hear it. Like, no, no! You know, like, again, the idea of the bar on the ground that everyone backpats the team for stepping over, and all of a sudden, you've just got something completely different in terms of what this organization wants to be, in terms of personal accountability from leadership, in terms of an open-mindedness to ideas, a willingness to hear criticism without being defensive about it. All of a sudden, you've got a club that, you know, I think is just carrying itself the way that you need to if you're actually going to win, if you're actually going to be all in on all the details that need to be taken care of to win. And let's go. Like, honestly, I mean, loved it.
It sets up a fascinating summer, right? And, you know, we'll have time on the show tomorrow to kind of dig in and piece through some of the individual comments about players. But the one I keep coming back to, and you've referenced it a couple times, but just is that commentary about we didn't prepare to play games in the second half, to play games when they got really meaningful, right? Not just, hey, we came up short, but we had Thatcher Demko and Brock Besser, but we were right there. Because it would have been so easy to really rest on the laurels of, look at how much this team transformed, look how much our defense improved, look how much our practice habits improved, the culture we built. And instead, not in response to any question about this, Patrick Alvin affirmatively going out of his way to be like, there are these specific things we didn't do as a group that cost us in the second half of the season, that cost us in the playoffs, and that's what we need to fix, right? Yeah. And again, it's something that is so part of the narrative of how they turn this team around, right? Changing the practice habits. And he's acknowledging, like, actually, that let us down.
Yeah.
Yeah, it improved, but it ultimately let us down as well. And I think that's fascinating.
Yeah. More work to go. And, you know, there were some interesting bits. Like, you know, I think it's interesting that Tocchet's reluctant to hire a power play coach.
Uh-huh. I find that interesting as well.
Especially given that he name-checked all the help he has, and most of it is part-time guys. Guys who are either aren't on the road with the team, or like Sergei Gonchar, are in and out. So, you know, it's not like, I think Tocchet has the right idea with the motion power play. I mean, he ran an excellent power play in Pittsburgh. It was under his tutelage. Like, do you know who the head coach was when Steven Stamkos got moved to the left flank?
Rick Tocchet
in Tampa Bay. I mean, what, you're 500 career goals later for Stamkos? Like, not that Tocchet gets, like, the lion's share of the credit for Stamkos being a generational sniper, but This is a guy who knows his way around 5-on-4 play. I just wonder if it's too much work given the other demands of the job and given the part-time nature of some of his support, which he specifically cited. You know, the Pettersson answer, the tendonitis, the doctors, I think that raises more questions than it answers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's obviously some threads, if you want to pull controversially on them, but I just think the overall takeaway, given the way that this organization has discussed itself and looked at itself and communicated to its fans over the years, is just the massive departure in the expectations, standards, and accountability. The, like, broad-chested ability to hear criticism and meet it head-on as opposed to ducking it or flinching or suggesting it was unfair. That was what I wanted to see. That was awesome. And you know, ultimately for me, is going to overshadow some of the concerns or some of the pressure points or, you know, some of the questions that I still have stemming from some answers throughout that availability.
And we'll have lots of time to continue to look forward to the summer. What will they do to try to live up to that aggressive, high standard that they set today? We'll get into it tomorrow. Bick Nizar is coming up next on The People Show to continue to dive into everything we heard at Rogers Arena today. Thanks for listening. Keep it right here on Sportsnet 650.